right, let me just pause. Jed, is that your voice joining us?
Yes, I am here. Made it back.
Duly noted. In fact, you are here. A fabulous good morning, good afternoon, depending on your time zones and where you are, and frankly, your point of view and perspective. This is Ernest and Jed, and we are here for the MediaBits Power Hour, an educational opportunity for advertising sales leaders around the world. Whether you're selling ads in print, by a newsletter, or on the web, or a combination of both or all three, by land, sea, and air, we are here to help you win every step of the way. You're always going to hear us at the very beginning, encourage you, find a quiet spot, turn over off anything electronic, really be able to focus in on the things that we cover. And then as you know, the more notes you take, the more notes you make, the more that we're going to transfer the knowledge to you. There's not an accident that we do not put something on the screen that would create multitasking or many tasking. Today is our 238th educational program over the last 21 years, and we're going to be sharing with you tools and resources and techniques and strategies that help you win. Also, we appreciate the questions that have already come in. Thank you so much. We have sorted, organized, spiral-bound them. We're set and ready to go. We'll be weaving those in, and then we appreciate your real-time questions as well. With me is Jed, the CEO and founder of MediaBids. And Jed, give us an update. Tell us what's cooking in your world with you and your team. I always appreciate, and we always appreciate, our working together. So, some opening words.
Sure. First of all, thanks to Ernest for being the brains behind these teleseminars. Thanks to all of you for joining us. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBids, and we are a company that is wholly devoted to generating revenue for publications. We work with thousands of advertisers and about 12,000 publications, and we have several different formats that we use to get ads into print publications. But we're always experimenting and looking for new ways to maximize the opportunities in print. We track and study the results that the ads that we place generate, and we've got pretty exciting information about a lot of the advertisers that we work with. I think Ernest and I haven't settled on yet, but I think next month we'll sort of give a recap of what we learned in 2015, but overall, I mean, what we find over and over again with national advertisers that we work with is that print produces excellent results when you measure it, and so we're in the business of measuring the results that are generated and proving to advertisers that have otherwise long ago abandoned print that print is a good vehicle for them to use. So if you'd like to learn more about MediaBids, if you'd like to talk to us about what we do, if you're currently using us and would you like to talk to us about anything else, we're always available and would love to hear from you. So give us a call or send us an email. And we look forward to contacting you. So thanks again for joining us.
Perfect. And I must say that, Jed, not only do I love our working together over all of the 10-plus going into our 11th year now, but I want all of you to know that when you hear Jed talking about working with tens and tens of publications and literally tens of thousands of ads that are placed and literally millions of inbound calls, man, oh, man, do they know what they're doing, right? Take the time to study what it is they're doing. If you're already working with Jed and the team at MediaBids, great. If you're not, stop in your tracks, contact them, and listen and learn what they're doing. It's a wonderful model. They'll bring fabulous advertisers to you. They will revenue share. They'll have a revenue relationship with them. They'll help you make money. And what I always love, Jed, is you bring advertisers that media groups would not often have. They can piggyback that to go sell even more advertisers of that same strength and that same caliber, and it's always wonderful. So thank you for all the work, and My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I've been in the advertising sales industry since 1986, launched three of my own publications, was a leader in a billion-dollar media group. We launched Power Hour in 1995 and have coached more than 2,000 advertising sales leaders and companies and their sales teams in 11 time zones around the world for the last 21 years. We like to say that the hotter the kitchen, the more that we like to be in it with you. What does that mean? If you're looking to drive revenue, if you're looking to open up new opportunities and possibilities, if you are on the other side with challenges, those are the things that we love the most. We want those that are the most engaged, the most excited about the potentials in the future, and off we go. We've also, across the LinkedIn platform, developed 20 groups with 400 million members, 2.2 million groups in LinkedIn. We're very proud of our work on LinkedIn. We're one of the top 200 groups in the world across that platform. It is vitally important. You're going to hear us talk about that today. Vitally important to your success to understand all the ins and outs of LinkedIn as we see it, both members, but being group owners and moderators. There's a lot of insightfulness there. And again, we've working together with Jed and their team have put on years and years and years of educational programs like this. So thank you so much. And then lastly, every Tuesday we have a live Sales Academy. The only difference is rather than just hearing myself and Jed today, we interact with you live, and we love that part. Today, we're talking about business development success, and is your engine working? And Jed, probably to step back for just a moment, every year, for some of our clients, December, most in January, we step back and we do a SWOT analysis together with them, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And we look sort of big picture at where they were last year and where they are going this year. And we sort of use the 80-20 rule. 20% of our focus is where have we been so that if we've got good stuff cooking, let's keep it rocking. And if things didn't go as well as we would like or if there were areas that we didn't have momentum, let's make certain to focus more on them going into the new year. And that's where we spend 80% of the time. Hence the reason why business development success really dovetails right in here. And the part that I always like to also kick off sort of that visual is like a shark moving through the water, right? We know that a shark is constantly moving and must move to thrive and move to survive. And that's the world of ad sales, that whether we're talking about print ads, digital ads, e-newsletters, websites, whatever it might be, that the world of media and advertising sales keeps changing at an incredible pace, right, Jed, as we kind of look across the landscape?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's changed enormously, even in the last year, right? But if you look back 2, 3, 4 years, it's almost a different world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the pace of what we get by mobile, the pace of social media, the success of what Facebook has done and what that means to the media world, also the success of Google over the last decade. I mean, these are all things that are altering the face of everything we do. And when I'm doing a Google search, or when I'm across Facebook, or if I'm utilizing Twitter, or if I'm on a website blog, or if I'm in LinkedIn, I not only experience it, Jed, one-dimensionally, what is it that I want to know, but I think two-dimensionally through the media filter, right, that we bring and that we think about the media world. Why am I seeing this page? Who teed it up? What else is on that page? I recently saw a rundown of the Facebook investor call they did do once a quarter, and they were even talking about the success of Instagram that now has 400 million members, WhatsApp, 800 million. I was like, wow. I mean, and then I found myself this morning on Instagram going, okay, scroll, 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 whoops, why am I seeing this ad right in front of me? And then I realized it was an ad for Sundance. And Sundance happens to be right now happening where our corporate offices are in Park City. So I'm going, holy smokes, Instagram put an ad timely related to Sundance right in front of me this morning, and it made me twitch for a moment, right? Because someone's got to look over my shoulder to know what, where I'm based, the kinds of things that I'm teeing up and posting, right? And then teeing up an ad, perfect. But by the way, the ad was very appropriate, right? So that kind of just-in-time advertising is what is possible out there, and we have to be aware of it through the filter of what we experience as individuals, but then also what our advertisers are experiencing in terms of results. Does that make sense, Jed?
Yeah, right. I mean, there's so many options out there and so many opportunities, and a lot of them are pretty neat, right? They're, you know, as you just described, you know, in your example, you know, people, whether it's Yelp or you know, or many of the services out there, you know, there are lots of ways of getting to people right at the, you know, based on their geography at that moment. You know, and as salespeople, right? You know, you have to understand what's being thrown at your customers, at your potential customers. What's being, you know, what decisions they're making, and what they're deciding against. You know, if they're deciding against you, why? Right? What else are they deciding on?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it's also a reminder that we need to be true to what we deliver and what we deliver really well. Well, we have a question that we'll field a little bit later, but there's a question from Michael in Arizona that, you know, just dovetails. In the scale of local publications, he says, who strongly rely on a small readership, how do you make up for the lack of big content and news? You have to be who you are. You can't be who you're not. And we'll talk about that, Michael, in just a little bit. But coming back to this piece about business development, you know, thinking about our engine, how well it's working, thinking about the opportunities as we go forward, this whole piece about, like a shark, our business development, we're moving forward. It's part of our competitive advantage. But it also means that, you know, when we look at market share or market percent. Market share is the percent of ads you've sold versus the potential, meaning you versus your competitors. Market percent is equals dollars, right? The total dollars. And when we often have this conversation with those who are our clients on this, and we talk about this, in some cases it's like, hey, we don't have that number, or we don't know it, or we don't track it. In other cases, it's like, yeah, we're only getting a sliver or only a piece. I was working with a client about a year ago, and I said, you know, what are the total number of ads that your competitors have that you don't? She said, I don't know. I said, okay, well, there's your step. And when she came back, she said, holy smokes, there's like more than 100. I really didn't think it was that. I said, great. And these are all of size? Yes, they are. More than 100. And I said, okay, great. Multiply that times the revenue potential. How much is out there? She gulped and said, holy smokes, that's a whole lot more than I realized. So our approach to business development, sometimes it can sneak up on us. Sometimes we don't stop to realize that the market share and the market percent are factors from that perspective. Also, when we think about sort of our business development dashboard, right? You know, this is about what we measure, and what we measure is what improves strategically. And it also ties in our dashboard when we think about compensation, promotions, bonuses, all the things that also sync up with the revenue that we're driving and the career paths that we offer, right? And so when we talk about business development, and this also dovetails from the Tuesday Academy that we host every single week, and there are 26 specific business development strategies. Now, for the purpose of today, Jed and myself and in our planning, we're going to call out about half a dozen of those and just talk a little bit about them. And during any of our educational programs, we always have three goals, right? The first goal is we want to share a new idea that stretches your thinking. Secondly, confirm what you're doing is best practices of ad sales teams around the world. And then third is the serendipitous, the things that you don't even count on or we don't count on. For example, the questions that are coming in real time during our educational program that we're going to field, it may skewer something or change an emphasis, or it might spur a thought or a story that Jed might share or that I might share that we had not even anticipated. So, well, let's roll through a couple of these pieces. Number one, you've already heard us talk about LinkedIn, 400 million leaders, stopping your tracks, right? LinkedIn, you have to know and want to know it cold. There, a quick comment about LinkedIn, though, they made platform changes last year, some that they did quietly in the first and second quarter, some that they did significantly in the third quarter. The most significant change is that LinkedIn and the groups, 2 million plus, no longer send out a daily email per group. And if you make a reply or post on a discussion, you no longer get that by an email. We cannot stress enough. The things that have been done in and around LinkedIn are incredibly disappointing. It's created a significant decline within their platform, so much so that, frankly, this last summer we divested of all investment in LinkedIn and have lost, frankly, a lot of trust and confidence in their leadership. Now, does that mean the platform doesn't serve us? Well, we have to focus it differently. It positively serves us in a variety of ways, looking for alliance partners, prospecting, working in silos. We'll talk about that. There are benefits to LinkedIn, but some of the significant areas to raise your visibility and the reason to own and run groups that we've been such a fan of have greatly declined or diminished at this moment. All we know is at this moment, the things that LinkedIn has done have been very detrimental. But do not skip over that LinkedIn still remains a very important part of our business development strategy. Next, our e-newsletters. This just cold. It's a newsletter that goes out to your readers is a must. But the newsletter that also goes out to your prospects, and meaning your prospective advertisers and your current advertisers, is equally important and also a must. And Jed, if I were being very honest, when we meet with groups and start to talk about their marketing engine, we'll hear about their newsletter that goes out to readers in most cases, not all, but we don't hear enough about the newsletters that go out to educate advertisers and prospective advertisers, and sometimes we're surprised by that. You follow me on that?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Jed, are you still with us there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I think Jed
you hear
might
me?
To be on mute, so let's see if he rolls in, and then we'll fold him right in. So when we're thinking about the e-newsletters, what we want to say here to you is that take a stand for this year and ensure that you have your newsletter strategy in place, okay? So therefore, as you're thinking about the way that you reach out and educate your advertisers and your prospective advertisers is vitally important. What do we mean by that? It is impossible to maybe have 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 conversations with every prospect in your marketplace, even if it's 200, but it is possible to send a newsletter to 200, to 500, or 2,000 as we go forward, okay? So just recognize that that piece is a very important part of your business development strategy. The next point, again, we're breezing through some of the 26 that we believe are the most important acquisitions. Acquiring competitors that are struggling or acquiring competitors that just want out of the biz means that you can raise your market share, your market potential, and give you more opportunity going forward. We are passionate about helping our clients buy direct competitors or buy those media groups that there's a good strategic fit or even an expansion of what it is you're currently doing, okay? So we truly believe in acquisitions. Another data point, and then I'll pause and just confirm that Jed is here with us, is
I'm
that
here.
Coming from a place of education, whether it's educational roundtables that we do in person, whether it's educational webcasts, webinars, teleseminars like today, ask yourself every 30 days, whether it's your newsletter, a roundtable in person, an educational program like you're joining here today, ask yourself what you're doing to educate the marketplace, those whom you work with, to showcase your thought leadership, to showcase white papers, industry research, that you have an authoritative voice in your space and sector. If you don't come from a place of education, then you're just a Me Too media buy, literally a Me Too media buy, and that's not enough in today's world. You're not distinguishing yourself enough, and frankly, when you put on educational programs, which I began doing in my corporate days 3 decades ago, I was educating in the front of the room and selling ads in the back of the room, literally. So the more that you give, the more that you get when you think about that from an educational perspective, okay? Let me just confirm. Jed, is that you I hear back with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. Yes, I had a feeling for just the moment that you bipped off. I think you rolled out and made some scrambled eggs and some biscuits. Is that what you were making?
No, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me, so I apologize. I'm not sure what happened. So,
no problem.
We're back in business.
But we're back. Beautiful.
Sorry about that.
No problemo. Was there any, and I've been touching on LinkedIn and newsletters, acquisitions, and the importance of educational programs, events, and opportunities. Was there anything that you wanted to comment on before we move forward related to business development strategies?
Well, when we got cut off, you know, one of the things that I was about to say was just that, you know, with the newsletters that publications send out, you know, some publications, we get a lot here, right, because we're sort of viewed as a potential advertiser, kind of in a general sense, for thousands of publications. So we see a lot of them. And, you know, some of them are great, right? They sort of give you information about what it is that the publication is doing differently or about, you know, about features that they have coming up or about changes that they've made or, you know, the things that really can impact your advertising decisions. You know, others are more along the lines of, you know, we have a special today, you know, buy two, get one free type of thing, and you know, get a, you know, we have a, it's just, it's more, it's less educational and more of a sales pitch. So, you know, speaking personally, I think that the ones that are educational end up being more effective because they're a little more, they give you more to make your decision on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that is really the key, that when you see the newsletters that come out that say, hurry up, buy your space, our deadline is, you know, the 10th of this month, you know, that's what we're talking about. Coming from that place doesn't give you enough value and enough readability, enough merit, right? And so what we're asking you to think about, there are the newsletters that go out to the readers, right, of your media, and that's whether your website or your newsletter or your print publication or newspaper or magazine or whatever that may be. But on the other side, right, then we have the other piece, which is what goes out to the to your potential advertisers and prospects. And that's really the part that we're teeing on right here. Also remember, within your space and sector, one of our signature parts of our coaching and training over the years is centers of influence, those who sort of know everything and everybody. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later when we talk about LSG, but stay tuned. Centers of influence will help you stay on the pulse of a sector. They'll keep you current with the sector. They'll give you leads and referrals and open up introductions, and likewise, they want some things back from you, and we'll also talk about that piece. So let's field, Jed, if we could, a couple of questions. We have a question from June who says, what is the best way to convince an advertiser that you've been working on for years to finally advertise? Well, June, it's a great question. We have those along the way that when you say, and we don't, of course, know all the details yet, but for years they've been trying to, you know, get this person to advertise or this company or this group. And the first piece for me is, what has happened over all of the years? Number one, how come they haven't? Are they a past advertiser? They had a bad experience? Is it that they don't need the advertising? They've got a prime visibility, you know, retail location? Or, in fact, are they with your competitors? And that's the part that really eats my heart out when I see that I've got three competitors, that advertiser is in all three, and they're not with me. Okay, so the immediate response, assuming that that's the case, they're already spending money with my competitors, is that I would use our classic teardown approach that says, if you can see the three competitors and you know their rate card, you know what they're spending on print and or digital, you can get an aggregate budget. From that aggregate budget, you've heard us talk about it in our programs over the years, take that aggregate budget, make a recommendation to scale back slightly each of those campaigns, and in doing so, now they get what? Four solutions for the same budget S3. We call that our teardown approach. It's a longer story to all of it. You can go back and listen to an educational program on media bids related to that. We did a full hour related to that, but that would be our recommendation, among other things. Jed, some comments related to this particular question from June related to getting an advertiser to work with her that they've been working on for years and years.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be a teleseminar if I didn't talk about measuring results. So the my philosophy on this is maybe slightly different than Ernest, and I think that there are different ways of approaching it. I think that the number one reason why people don't advertise is because they don't believe that your publication is going to generate revenue for them. If you can show them that your publication will generate revenue for them, they will advertise. You won't be able to stop them from advertising. They will be calling you because it will be important for them to be in your publication. When someone says no, it's really more than anything a way of telling you that they're not sure that it's going to work, because it doesn't make any sense for someone not to spend money on advertising if they are making money on that advertising. So with that as a general premise, right, the way that I would approach it would be to say to this person, if I can prove to you that we can generate revenue for you, then you'll advertise, right? And if I can prove that to you by doing X, Y, and Z, by using a unique phone number, for example, in the ad, and show you the results that come in by using a unique landing page on a website, it can even be a QR code, right? There are many different ways of tracking results. But if I can prove to you that we are going to generate results, then you'll continue advertising, right? And almost, you know, I've never had anyone say no to that. If you can get them to make that first leap and make it about the results and not about you or your salesperson or an article they disagreed with 5 years ago, then you're really on the right track. Then it just becomes a function of whether or not your publication can, in fact, generate the kind of results that they're used to. One of the difficult things about the teardown approach, which is a great idea, but one of the difficult things in sort of the changing climate is that it becomes difficult to take into account everything, right? Take into account what they're spending on Google and what they're spending on mobile, and maybe they're not spending anything, but. But keep in mind, there are competitors out there that they're using, that they've signed up with since they told you no the last time, right? You can almost bet on it, right? Whether it's search engine advertising or banner ads or mobile or anything, there's so many advertising opportunities out there now that they've almost certainly engaged in this sort of idea of a response-based advertising platform with someone. And that can be to your advantage, because once they've gone down that road, it's hard to get them to go down another road without keeping that in mind. And no one else, none of your print competitors, are talking to them about results. You can be the first one in print to say to them, we can generate more sales for you. Here's how I know. Because we have another advertiser that's similar to yours, to you, that we can that we've done well with. You know, our average number of phone calls per ad is X. We have this many people who, you know, unique callers who called last month. You know, you can give them all kinds of stats that, frankly, they're just not getting from other print people. And it can really be an effective sales tool, because once you can show them those results, more than likely, if they're like many businesses in America today, they are looking at those results and making their advertising decisions.
Mm-hmm. And as I'm listening to Jed, and as all of you are listening to Jed, there's some key pieces that I want to pull out that are completely spot on. Number one, the status quo, right? Unless Jed, what you're saying is, unless we disrupt the status quo, we're not going to get their attention. How do we disrupt it, right? And that is by proving and validating that we're doing the job, because the very essence of advertising says what? Jed, if I give you a dollar, will you give me $2 back? Jed, if it's really working well and I give you a dollar, will you give me $10 back? Well, who wouldn't like those odds if we're doing that good a job, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, all right. And the and the part about tracking and about tracking the results and being able to know that not only am I going to say I did it, but I actually did do it, means the advertiser goes, holla, holla, you're not only doing that, but now, Jed, I'm going to give you $2 because you're going to give me what? 20 back. I'm going to give you $3 because you're going to give me 30 back. It is getting more exciting because you're helping me with my biz and you're helping me win. Does that make sense, Jed?
Right. I mean, that's how all business is done. You could say the same thing about resale and wholesale. You know, you could say the same thing about franchises. You know, I mean, it's essentially what businesses are doing all over the world, and somehow publications very often, not always, but very often, have gotten it through their mind that they're not in that business, right? That they're in a different business. They're in the real estate business. That they sell space, and then their job is done. And what advertisers are telling you when they say they don't want to advertise is, we're not interested in buying space in your neighborhood. But if you could show them that buying space in their neighborhood would make them money, you can bet that they would want to buy space in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. You bet. So, June, we're hoping that that is helpful to you and to everybody else who's joining us live or who's listening to it afterward. It's a very compelling and engaging question, so thank you for that. Let's continue, because this will dovetail right into the points. There's a second of 3 points that we promised to cover, and let's talk about 4x4, 1 plus 1 equals 5, and the infamous LSG, right? So 4x4 is sort of that reminder that when we're working with our large or medium-sized clients, when we're working with ad agencies, it also links back to LinkedIn. We'll come around the bend. But we want to go wider and deeper. You know, you might be working with the marketing department, right? But then you've got HR who needs help because they also are hiring, and maybe you are a nice fit for that. And maybe the sales department has something new that they're rolling out that marketing isn't even tracking along with, or they need a little different focus. Here's a quick example. We've got a client right now, Jed, that needed some Super Bowl advertising, right? And
Super
we needed
Bowl
to help
literally,
them.
Literally advertising
literally,
Super Bowl?
Little Bowl. Well, advertising for around the Super Bowl, right? That they had
Super
something
Bowl. Okay.
Super Bowl. Did you think it was Super Bowl ads? Did you eat
it's
a
that
bowl
Utah accent. It's that funny Utah accent.
The Super Bowl with an L.
Right.
And as a result of that, the campaign moved very, very rapidly, and it moved all the way up to the CEO level, even faster than the marketing department was keeping up. So the part about this is silos. Companies move quickly, and the deeper you are in, when we think about our business development, you can go wider and deeper. But you can also get those internal referrals. You can have marketing who's talking to sales, who's talking to the C-level, who's talking to HR, and all of a sudden you find yourself saying, wow, I'm going into this client, and I've got 4 meetings to run, with all having their own different focus. The opposite is true. If we don't realize the depth of what's out there and available, we may be missing opportunities. Now, the shortest way to do this is sort your CRM, whatever you use to track your company relationships, and ask yourself, how come I only have one or two contacts with these companies that are medium or large in size? Now we come back to LinkedIn. Go over to LinkedIn, and put their company name in, and step back and realize it's like, wait a minute, there's 586 people within that company. I didn't even realize they were that large. And my contact with Tina has 3 counterparts. And my contact with Bill has 2 other people above him as well or below. So what we're really saying is go deeper. Go deeper in and find those opportunities. And LinkedIn is a beautiful opportunity for that. 4x4, a reminder that take your business development and then replicate it. The other part is that when you look at those you serve, take, for example, RV dealerships. If that was your particular category, you say, well, we know how to sell you know, with certain companies, we go in and we work on their new RVs. And then we have other companies that we have the ancillary services. And then we've got the service department. And then we've got the warranty. And then we also help them with, in some cases, also, you know, some of the job openings or help wanted type ads. Well, when you do that with one of your RV dealers, then go replicate that. You pause and go, wait a minute, we're out selling across 100 dealers. We should go sell the same. We should be working in the same department with every single dealership. Maybe not every single dealership has the same need, but potentially they could engage us for those in a lot of different departments. Jed, anything to add to that about working in silos and going deeper as you think about that?
Well, you know, it sort of gets back to the question we just answered, and that is that, you know, the more information you can bring to the table and the more you can talk to any business about the specifics of their business and give them the confidence to spend money so that they can make money, the better off you're going to be. This is almost universally true, you know, whether it's, you know, it's the reason why going to a mechanic that works on a specific model car is oftentimes a better experience than going to a very general mechanic who maybe has never seen your model car before. There's lots of reasons why it can be beneficial. And the main thing is that, you know, as Ernest alluded to, you become a resource. You become someone who people can talk to about their business in a knowledgeable way. You become more of a coworker, someone who they can ask questions of and are giving intelligent answers, as opposed to someone with only one purpose in mind, and that is to sell ad space.
Yep, and just to field the question that just came in from Bill related to working with ad agencies, not only does it apply, but it's intensely important because, Jed, what do we know about ad agencies? I might be working with Tina, and she has a portfolio of 10, but, you know, Rick sitting across, you know, the cubicle from her, he's got his 10, and Ryan has got his 10, and so positively, the same rules apply across ad agencies as well. So 4x4, go deep, work in the silos, and look for those internal referrals. Let's talk a little bit about 1 + 1 = 5. This mirrors and dovetails so much of the work that we do on Tuesday, Jed, during our sales academy. We talk about building smart match alliances. You've heard me share a couple of times over all of the years. I've told the story of Danielle. Smart match alliances. Meaning, and centers of influences, looking for those in that space and sector who are absolutely on the pulse, looking for those alliance opportunities, which also dovetails into LSG, lead sharing groups. What we're asking you to do is step back for just a moment. Think about your space in the marketplace. Think about those that you're selling to. There are other sales and marketing groups selling products or services into that same space. Take, for example, the RV space. We started off with that. Think about those who are speakers, trainers, coaches, consultants. Think about those that are selling services into those RV dealerships. Think about those that are selling trailer hitches or campgrounds. You know, all of the things that relate to RV, right, there may be others that are out there speaking and writing and training and servicing and selling into that space. That's your target. When you think about the business development, the story about Danielle goes back to she was working for a large paint company, and I was selling ads into apartment communities. They need lots of paint. But I also realized that there were landscapers that were out there, and I realized there were pool services, and I realized there were roofing companies, and I started to realize the magnitude of all that was out there. And I sat down over lunch with Danielle, and we got to chatting. And she knew so much about the sector, and there were introductions she wanted to help me open doors. This goes back to June's piece that if Danielle was able to open a door for an advertiser that I've been trying to get into, holy smokes. But in exchange, Danielle wanted from me what? Introductions from my Rolodex. All right, so centers of influences, 1 + 1 = 5, the intention of building alliances, the intention of lead sharing groups means that we can magnify and amplify our impact in our sector. What we're really saying, Jed and I, is that don't go it alone. Don't go it alone just going through the front door to sell your ad solutions, which is fine. But remember, through the back door and windows can come wonderful introductions and connections, and you can magnify and amplify your opportunity. There, Danielle and I were sitting over lunch, and we got to talking about, you know, good companies that do landscaping for these apartment communities, and she mentioned a name, and we got to talking about companies that sell washers and dryers, and I mentioned a name. We went back and forth, and the next lunch, after she and I spent a couple hours eating that day, we realized that we were onto something. And all of a sudden, the next lunch, we had five or six of us. And the next lunch, we had eight or ten of us. And the buzz around that table was unbelievable. Remember, no competitors at that table. So there was only one roofing company and one landscaping company. And here I am looking to sell my ad solutions. So I'm not competing with anybody at that table. None of my competitors are there. And it was unbelievable, right? Think about your business development strategy and not going it alone from that perspective. Let's field this question, Jed, from Michael in Arizona. He says, in the scale of local publications who rely on a smaller readership, how do we make up for the lack of big content and news? You want to field this one first about sort of, you know, how do, if we're small, do we celebrate? If we're competing against the big, how do we distinguish ourselves, Jed?
I think that publications can distinguish themselves in many, many different ways. The most important thing is that they distinguish themselves in some way. I think that there is no reason to believe that people desire national news or statewide news any more than they do local news. If you look at a lot of the look at a lot of the stats that come out about what people are looking for in newspapers or from news in general, it's always local, local, local. Everyone, you know, the trend is to have news be as local as it possibly can to a specific person. And you see this happening digitally by people being able to cater the news that they see down to their specific location at a specific time, whether that be weather or car accidents or burglaries or arrests, whatever it might be. There's an appetite for local news. I think that what's the most important thing for any publication to do is to constantly be asking themselves, you know, what can we do to increase the appetite within this group that we're serving. Advertisers don't necessarily want everyone to be running the same stories. You know, the advertisers that we deal with, for example, most of whom are, you know, big national companies, they could absolutely care less whether there's a story about Donald Trump on the front page or a story about, you know, changes being made to a local school. What they care about is whether people are reading the publication. And it's really interesting when we look at the results generated by publications, because there are publications that do provide national news and do provide statewide news that do very, very well from a response basis. There are also examples of large daily publications that are delivering both those types of news and delivering almost no results. It leads me to believe that there is a huge gap between circulation and readership, and I can't figure out how to measure that gap, because there are local publications with small circulations, with nothing but local news, that are incredibly strong performers. On the other hand, there are some local publications with local news that are not incredibly strong performers. So there, I think what it boils down to is there are some publications that are providing tools to their readership and their communities that their readership finds indispensable. And they read that publication every day. And they look at it, or every week, or every month, whatever the time period may be. But they look through the publication, and they need it, as opposed to other publications, sometimes with larger circulation, I believe, have very small readerships, because when you look at the results that are generated, they're almost non-existent. So I think whatever focus you have, whatever focus you decide on, what's less important than the focus is making sure that it's what your readership wants.
I've probably horrified about
anyone who's involved in editorial on the call is probably probably washing their hands. But
listen, you're spot on. I remember working with a group of a large media group out of Chicago when they were carving out zip code hyper local, and this goes back more than a decade, right? They're already onto something. I think about the news several years ago about Warren Buffett who bought local community newspapers because it made sense. And I was thinking about my own example, Jed, the Salt Lake Tribune with 1 million-plus readers. I've never once turned a page. But my Park City Record that focuses on the 5,000 or 6,000 people in the city and the 20 or so thousand that are in the surrounding, I read cover to cover. Take it one step further. Let's talk about nextdoor.com. Right, the website that is so hyper local that there's posts saying, "Can anyone recommend a singing coach that will come to my home in the neighborhood?" It's literally you have to be in the neighborhood to be able to tuck into Nextdoor, and only your zip code that request for who do you recommend for window washing or car detailing, or hey, where did the elk go in the backyard? And pictures are showing up. I mean, micro hyper local. So the point is. Again, Michael, going back to your point, be who you are. Celebrate that you're tight. There is value to being small, and there's power in that. Celebrate that, but go even deeper. Own the small, own the space, and good and great things will come as a result of that. Let's shift gears.
I just want to reiterate real quickly, and this is just a classic mistake, at least from my perspective, that publications make all the time, and that is that they believe that by telling advertisers that they are covering bigger events than they really are by sort of escalating their circulation estimates and their readership estimates and making them seem more geographically important than they really are. They think that very often publications think that that's the ticket to getting advertisers, and it really isn't. What's the ticket to getting advertisers is being able to serve a group, and it doesn't really matter how big that group is as long as you're really serving it. I have lots of examples of that, but it is absolutely true. I can't tell you, and I've used this before in other teleseminars, but we talk to a lot of publications here, and I bet you I talk to at least one publication a week, if not more, that tells me that their readership is the wealthiest in the country, and there are. And these are not people who are near each other. This is coming from one publication in California, one in Connecticut, one in, Denver, one in Chicago, everyone, it's a little bit like Garrison Keillor, right? Like, everyone's readers are good-looking and wealthy and are just looking for a place to buy a mattress. And it's just not true. So if you're honest about it, even if it's that your readership is decidedly middle class, that's okay. There are lots of big, very successful national companies that are looking for the types of readers you have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, Michael, for you and for those who are joining us live, we hope that that is helpful. Be who you are. Celebrate it, and then go deep and own the space positively. And there was also a question about from Myron in Tennessee, who was asking about increase my auto retail ads, my housing ads, Myron, our comments are exactly the same. Own your space, live it, breathe it, walk it, talk it, and mirror what we're talking about here, and great and wonderful ad sales will come as a result. The third point, and we'll just come around the bend here, we agree to cover this third point about your professional and trade associations and organizations. The first piece we want to recognize is this is primarily on the B2B side. Right? So if you're doing B2C, you may not have, maybe it's a chamber of commerce that might be beneficial. Maybe it's things like civic groups like Rotary or Kiwanis or JCs or other United Way, other kinds of organizations. For those of you on the B2B side, go back, like we're talking about RV or realtors or automotive, all of them have professional associations. And our recommendation there is your involvement is way more than just showing up for the rubber turkey or the rubber chicken luncheons and just, you know, writing your monthly checks for the association. We want you to be involved. And how do we be involved? How are we involved? We speak. We speak at the front of the room. It shows our thought leadership, much like we talked about earlier, setting yourself apart. We write, we post, we blog, we utilize their LinkedIn groups, we contribute to their e-newsletters. These are ways, these are opportunities to get above the noise. And that really is another key way to show thought leadership for you and for your advertising sales team. It also means that you can tuck into your presentation when you speak, when you write, when you participate on panels, when you're featured at one of the trade shows during the course of a year, you get to tuck that into your media kit in your presentation, and it shows that you have an authoritative voice so that when you're sitting down and you're talking to an ad agency or key decision makers and they're looking at you and other media solutions, they can see how much you bring to the table when you own your space. We're back to Michael in Arizona and Myron in Tennessee. Same points here as well. You get to sync that up. And then we also remember that if we work smartly with our associations, it's a great place to go fish and find alliance partners, centers of influences, those that can make introductions and referrals, all of those great and wonderful things. We did see a question that came in related to this, meaning can you also do this virtual? Like if you know, if there's a organization that, for example, you have a national organization that's, that maybe only puts on one conference a year, but all the vendors and suppliers are, you only see them once a year. It's not like, for example, an automotive association with automotive dealers. Yeah, you can go every single month, but it also works for those who are part of organizations that are more virtual, meaning they may only have one in-person event a year, but you've got 51 weeks a year. Go pull up the directory of vendors and suppliers. Go crisscross those vendors and suppliers to LinkedIn. Go look for the most seasoned, once again, the same opportunity to build alliances. And then the last point that we promised to share with you, the bonus point, so to speak, point number five, is that you can also utilize associations to do what? Hire and recruit. Right, and we don't mean necessarily from direct competitors. What we're really talking about here is the ability to hire and recruit from maybe other vendors who sell products and services into your same space. Okay, so professional and trade organizations and associations, they do a really great thing. They do all the work, the heavy lifting to bring your best clients and prospects forward, and we believe that's an invaluable part of your business development strategy as you look going forward. Jed, some additional comments or observations on this side?
I think that it really just goes to, you know, it can be sort of summed up as just remaining curious about the business you're serving. Whether you're B2B, like as Ernest explained, and you're focusing on a very specific silo, or even if you're B2C and you have a more general clientele, the same could be said about the local economy, for example. The same kind of the same kind of connections can be made and sort of general expertise can be made from the local, you know, in your local economy that can be made with you know, if you're focusing on one specific silo. For example, you know, you may know about a new company moving in, and that may matter a lot to the guy who runs the diner. You know, he may love to hear that there's going to be, you know, 30 more people working on Main Street next month. You know, that kind of information is something that people who are involved in ad sales are in a unique position to transmit.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be beneficial. So.
And when Jed says be curious, what we mean by that is know the jargon of those you're selling to. For example, going back to RV dealers, you know, if I were selling ads in that space, I'd want to know the average ticket price of an RV. I'd like to know how many times when someone calls, how many times they're willing to come to drive an RV. I'd like to know how far they're willing to drive. Are they willing to drive for a day or two to get the best price on an RV? You know, how much does the service matter? How often do they buy? I mean, these are all the things that you've got to live, breathe, walk, and talk. If I were selling to realtors, same thing. If I were selling to chiropractors, if I were selling to retail stores, I'd have so many questions along the way so I would know their jargon, I would know their conversion factor, I would know their hot buttons, and that gives me a massive opportunity and a massive competitive advantage. Okay?
And keep in mind that all that information that we just talked about, I have yet to meet a business owner who was not thrilled to talk about it. No one likes talking about anything more than themselves. So if you ask people questions about their business and the intricacies of it, I've yet to have someone tell me, none of your business, or, you know, I'm not comfortable talking to you about that. And people will tell you in intimate detail what the intricacies of their business. It's, you know, almost to the point where, you know, you become an expert whether you want to or not. Just by asking a few questions.
You're exactly right. And when you say, hey, listen, I spent all day long working with chiropractors like you. I know on average that, you know, that a potential new client of yours will make two contacts and check two of your reviews. Person goes, wow, I've never heard that. Or, yes, wow, you're exactly right. It's the principle that we call give to get, right? If I'm going to get information, Jed, from you by me revealing what I already know about the sector, you know, tells you that I must live in this space. But I'm not going to say I just met with Mary the chiropractor and business is way off. Or I'm not going to say I was with Tim the chiropractor, your competitor, who has the most brilliant marketing campaign. Let me tell you all about. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to always cloak it and speak broadly in terms that a person can trust that we've got a game plan to work together. Okay? Jed, we've covered a lot of ground. Always a pleasure working together with you and your team at MediaBids. Always appreciate our working together over all of these years. To each of you and all of you, we encourage you to go speak to Jed and their team at MediaBids, surf their website. For those of you already working with them, you know what they bring. For those of you that are newer to the MediaBids world, take a look, engage with their team, learn what they're doing. You'll be very pleased. In turn, come to our website, powerhour.com, and learn about all the coaching work that we do and provide. We will help you build great teams. We will help you compete aggressively. We have a fabulous academy specifically for ad sales leaders every Tuesday, and we never work with any of your direct competitors. Jed, some closing words for the group as we wrap things up here?
Well, thank you all for joining us, and thanks very much to Ernest. We look forward to having you on many more calls this year.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Always a pleasure to each of you and all of you. Thank you so much, and we'll see you back next month. Let us know what topics are on your mind. Let us know what topics you would like us to continue to include here. The tougher the challenge, the greater the opportunity, the more we'd like to cover it right here. So thank you so much. Make it a great day, and we'll be in touch. Thanks, Jed.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ernest.